All right, you are listening to Green Left Radio, and on the line we have Alex Bainbridge, national co-convener of Socialist Alliance, and a regular kind of writer for Green Left, and we have him on the program today to have a bit of a discussion about the kind of recent federal budget that was unveiled by the Liberal government that happened on Tuesday night, which has a number of kind of sort of announcements and changes. It's basically their kind of budget that they're trying to basically announce in the kind of lead up to kind of a potential kind of federal election. So Alex, I guess I wanted to sort of hear, I guess, what are some of your sort of initial kind of comments, I guess, on this federal budget and your criticisms to, I guess, start off, I guess, a bit of a kind of discussion for our program?
Look, I 100% agree with what Adam Band said, that this is a billionaire's budget. I think that's very clear. You can see that from the tax cuts that are going to the rich still, the handouts to corporations and the fossil fuel industry, and the fact that there's, basically they're planning for wage rises to go below inflation for the next 2 years. I mean, that's just, a few headline matters. So, I mean, for sure there are some, there's obviously some ways in which the government has tried to make this appear like it's a budget of sweeteners, like obviously gearing up for an election in the next little while. In that sense, it's not the hardest horror budget you've ever seen, but undoubtedly this is a budget that meets the interests of billionaires more than ordinary people.
And I guess, I mean, one of the kind of interesting kind of things about the federal budget has been, in the wake of, I guess, all the kind of allegations that have kind of happened in against the Parliament House of staffers around sexual harassment and sexual assault, one of the things that the Liberal government has kind of used to sort of sell this kind of budget has been they are basically promising millions kind of spent in kind of childcare, millions kind of spent in domestic violence services, women's services, etc. And I guess, I mean, what do you think, kind of, I guess, about that? Do you think this budget, as the Liberal government is trying to claim, is really like some positive kind of thing for women, or is it just really like a cover for the Liberal Party's own misogyny?
Look, I think clearly the government has been under a lot of pressure, rightly so, for their completely inadequate response to the rape allegations in Parliament House and the sexual assault allegations, and just in general their misogynistic attitudes. So the government's been under pressure and they've tried to make a response. Now, obviously, I think it is just true. You put more money into childcare, that will mean that that a number of women have got more options than they had before. Great. I mean, I'm not, that is fantastic. At the same time, you see, even the way the government sold that, they basically sold that on the basis of how many extra hours, Australian workers could work, how much this is going to add to the GDP, the GDP. So they're looking at it in a very, pro-corporate lens. And I think that if you step back and look at the bigger question, to me, I think that if you want to actually solve the real problems about, sexual assault and sexual violence in this society, that means that there needs to be genuine measures of, economic independence for women, at the very least, among other things as well. So, for example, that would mean we need to have, restore JobSeeker up to at least the poverty wages. At the moment, it's not. We need decent public housing. We need to end the basics card. I mean, these are all sort of basic sort of prerequisites to solve that sort of domestic violence and sexual violence, crisis that we've got in society. And it is a crisis. And, I mean, other things as well. I mean, reversing the abolition of the standalone family court. I mean, that was, the one signature headline achievement of Christian Porter as Attorney General. Well, now he's left that role under the shadow of, credible accusations of rape. And the government should actually reverse that decision. The government should restore the family court as a standalone court. These are the kinds of issues that that need to be dealt with if the government was serious. I mean, yeah, among other things, and I'm sure there's no doubt other people that can tell you more.
Yeah.
But I guess the point I'm trying to make is, sure, money for childcare, that's great. That'll lead to more choices for some women. Obviously, I think also a lot of that money is going to go to be a subsidy to private childcare operators. But just throwing money at something isn't necessarily solving the problem.
And to jump into there about the comments around childcare, because as a childcare worker, really my criticism of this, the reforms they're kind of proposing around childcare is it actually doesn't fundamentally address the issue around childcare, because basically, essentially, the basic sort of reform, and in terms of, you know, I will, you know, in a certain sense, I will probably benefit from it in a sense as a casual worker, because essentially what the government is doing is essentially they will basically subsidise, they're basically extending the childcare kind of subsidy, which basically means that more parents with children are going to have an incentive to send their children to childcare because it will actually be cheaper for them. And of course, obviously you kind of mentioned the government is sort of trying to, they've sort of framed that around, oh yes, there'll be more people going to work, sending their children to childcare. And that means there's more growth, more GDP, more money sort of flowing around. But I guess that's all well and good, I guess, in some ways. But I guess in some ways, as a perspective from a socialist, childcare should be free. And I guess the other issue, as sort of my union has sort of gone on about, these childcare reform doesn't actually address the whole issue affecting childcare workers, which are that we're grossly underpaid and disproportionately most childcare workers are women. And so going back to that sort of point you kind of made about economic independence, that would actually be the key thing that would actually address that issue, actually increasing the wages of childcare workers, and it's within the government's capacity to actually do that. But actually to go to kind of like the next kind of point I kind of wanted to sort of discuss is I wanted to sort of have a discussion about in this sort of about the federal budget and the climate, because really one of the striking things that's completely absent from this budget, despite these kind of talks, we're living in a climate crisis. Despite the fact that we had the bushfires that happened at the start of 2020, there's basically nothing, as far as I can know, that addresses anything about the climate within the budget. And I guess want to hear some of your comments on that.
Well, I think it's a massive failure. I mean, that alone, is a reason to not support this budget, to not be sort of coming behind it and giving it support, because, you know, the climate crisis is the biggest issue facing people today, including, everybody. As you say, this budget not only continues but expands subsidies to the fossil fuel industry, there's not even subsidies to private renewable energy producers. I mean, I think what will be really required to actually address to move as quickly as possible to 100% renewable energy is to bring the whole energy sector back into public ownership. I mean, you know, when I say a whole energy sector, I'm not saying like if there's a community wind farm or, but as a general rule, to make the driving force behind the energy sector public ownership, and then a plan to phase out of all fossil fuel use to be replaced by renewable energy sources. That is more than feasible in the urgent timeframe that we require, but it's not going to happen just by leaving it to market forces, and especially not. I mean, you often hear conservatives say that governments shouldn't pick winners, and I actually disagree with that, because that's basically an argument that the government should stay out of the market altogether, and that's basically just a matter of leaving the profit motive in charge. But at the moment, what the government is not even doing that, because at the moment the government is picking winners, and they're picking coal and gas to be the winners. And that is exactly the wrong priorities for the current situation.
And another kind of thing I noticed, I guess, about the federal budget is the question, I guess, of immigration. And essentially, what I've sort of read is the federal government is basically going to be increasing the funding of Christmas Island, because at this stage, Christmas Island is sort of not necessarily that functioning, although there are some people who have been sent to Christmas Island, but basically it appears to be, as part of the federal government, it is the kind of government's kind of agenda to actually increase the capacity of Christmas Island to be able to hold more migrants. I think it's mainly the main focus is on people that basically groups of people who want to kind of deport for criminal charges, etc. I think there's a proper term for that. But of course there's also potential implications for the refugee rights movement in terms of their kind of agenda of expanding these offshore kind of detention centres. And then of course there's another thing, which is there's a big attack, I think, on migrants who want to migrate to Australia, because essentially what the government has done is they've essentially done a big sort of budget cut where those who get new migrants who have just gained permanent residence won't be able to have access to any benefits like social services, like JobSeeker, etc., unless they live in the country for more than 4 years following their gaining of permanent residence.
Yeah, well, I would agree with all those points that you made, and I think that one of the things that, sort of a bit tangential, but it also is relating to the question that you asked. One of the other striking failures of this budget was that there was no money allocated to establish a genuine, decent, functioning quarantine service, or at least quarantine facilities for the time of the COVID pandemic. So the federal government has got the One Howard Springs facility, which is massively inadequate for the quarantine requirements of, you know, people coming and travelling to Australia and handing over the rest to the states. Now, my understanding is that if the federal government provides quarantine, they need to pay for it, whereas state governments, because quarantine isn't technically a state issue, state governments have got the power to basically make people pay for their own quarantine in a hotel. So really the hotel quarantine isn't adequate, and we want to get travel, allow people the freedom to travel, visit their families and return to Australia, et cetera, and for other people to come to Australia, we need decent quarantine facilities. So really we should be instead of boosting up money to sort of fund the sort of punitive, incarceration of refugees, in basically prison-like conditions, we should be promoting freedom by, establishing quarantine facilities that basically, make everybody easier to travel. It goes without saying. I mean, I've been a long-time refugee rights activist. I think that the current so-called border protection regime is actually not protecting Australian borders at all. It's only protecting... is using racism to protect, corporate profits and a general neoliberal program, and it's massively unfair. It's not the same issue, but connected to that is the general racism in immigration, where it's much easier to come to Australia from a wealthy country than from a poorer country, where typically people come have black and brown skin. So it's a racist policy that permeates the entire immigration system in Australia. We should move away from it. Now, part of that is budget allocations, and part of it is just actually a change of policy. But I guess to come back to what I started with, a much better thing to spend money on instead of, boosting Christmas Island or spending money to continue the unjust imprisonment of refugees would be to build quarantine facilities instead.
And given that we're running a bit low on, I guess, on time now, I'm thinking we can kind of conclude, I guess, a bit of this kind of discussion. Do you have, I guess, any kind of final comments you would like to kind of make, Alex?
Look, I think basically there's a famous Russian one said that people are always going to be deceived in politics if they don't learn to look at every single measure, proposal, policy through the eyes of which class is going to benefit. And from this budget, you can see very clearly that this is a budget which is designed to make the LNP government seem more palatable and, you know, to advance the interests of the billionaire class. And that's why we need an alternative to this style of, you know, billionaire budgets. We need people's budgets to look after ordinary people, not the corporate elite.
All right. Thank you very much, Alex. We'll go for this discussion on the federal budget.
Cheers, Alex.
Thanks, Jacob. Talk to you again.
Okay.